Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
As a cardiologist and a chef, Dr. Michael Fenster has combined his culinary talents with cutting-edge medical expertise and insight. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? Well, I know that you are, and I know you know that means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and we are brought to you by the great folks over at Real Salt. Hey, Nation, if you are as passionate, as intense, as dedicated to real, authentic ingredients as I am, you know, that means we've got to apply that to our spices and seasonings as well. And Real Salt comes from an ancient evaporated ocean from a time when the world was much more innocent and pure. So you want to make sure that when you're shopping for your spices, pick up some Real Salt. Head over to realsalt.com, and if you head over there, make sure to enter Dr. Mike and get yourself an extra discount. And speaking of real and authentic, I am excited about our guest today, Raghavan Iyer. He's a James Beard Award winner, and let me tell you, that is no easy feat. He's also a IACP, or International Association of Culinary Professionals, award-winning Teacher of the Year. He's the author of 660 Curries, Indian Cooking Unfolded, a whole slew of other cookbooks. He's written for Cooking Light, Fine Cooking, Weight Watchers magazine, Eating Well. I'm sure you've come across his recipes. He's the host of an Emmy Award-winning documentary, Asian Flavors, on Born in Mumbai. He's fluent in six languages. This guy is not only talented, he's brilliant. And he currently resides with his family in Minneapolis. And we want to talk to him about his new book, Smashed, Mashed, Boiled and Baked, and Fried too. Oh my goodness, it's all about the potato. Raghavan, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, Dr. Mike, it's my pleasure. I always love talking about potatoes with somebody who's equally passionate.
Well, you know, I'm a big a fan. I've been over to the UK a number of times. I've been to Ireland. You know, my wife, my beautiful wife, is of Irish descent. So potatoes are near and dear to my heart. And what's interesting, I want to start, if we can talk a little bit about the history of the potato. My most recent book, Ancient Eats, Volume 1, deals with the Vikings and the Greeks, but we have some more volumes coming out, and one of them happens to deal with the Mayans and the Incas. And mm-hmm. I don't think many people appreciate that the potato, which we see, you know, we talk about Ireland, it's, you know, French potatoes. You're going to tell us about its use in Indian and Asian cuisine, but it's actually a New World vegetable, isn't it?
It truly is. I mean, if you think about the history of potatoes, it started way back in the Andean civilization, probably around 10,000 BC. But you're right. I think it was the Incas who actually figured out how to cultivate it and make it an agriculturally sound vegetable. And that was around 1500 BC. And it's interesting how that, over the years, just took the world by storm, and from South America, it actually traveled to Europe. And so, you know, you talked about the UK and Ireland in particular, where it really took a strong hold. And then eventually, it actually came back to North America, and then it went back to the East. So, sort of an interesting route. But I think in every country that it set roots, it truly, I think, the people embraced it with such gusto, because it's one of those vegetables that, as you know, is versatile. It is available year-round, and it's also, I think, bottom line, it is very accessible in terms of pricing. So I think that's what really appealed to the, that's one of the reasons why this is the fourth largest crop in the world.
Wow. And you know, as a chef, you know, I think one of the things that folks don't often appreciate is that there's a wide variety of potatoes. They're not just, you know, Yukon Gold bakers. So could you explain for our audience a little bit? You know, we often talk about waxy or starchy potatoes mm-hmm. and, you know, purple mm-hmm. potatoes. There are a lot of options besides sort of just the regular sack of spuds.
It really is. But, you know, I think one of the things that you see that is still happening quite a lot in North America is when people go to the grocery store, they still shop by the variety of the potato. The varietal name is still not something that they seek. But, you know, there are, and I think that's one of the reasons why I broke down the book by really talking about two broad categories. Floury potatoes, as you mentioned, are potatoes that have a very high starch content, and it's also very low in moisture. So they lend itself beautifully well to things like baking or even deep frying and mashing. The waxy potatoes, on the other hand, are very high in moisture and lower in starch. And so because of that, they are really quite cohesive when they're being boiled in water or whether they're being pan roasted. So they lend itself beautifully well for potato salads and things of that nature. And of course, within those broad categories, there are, you mentioned the Yukon Gold, the russet, which is an extremely, I call it the workhorse of the potatoes. The russet Burbank, which came about in around 1870. And of course, everybody thinks about the potato. That's what they really think about. But you look at, the Kennebec or the Yellowfin or the Onaway. These varietals are out there as well. But, again, people don't necessarily seek a potato by the varietal name. And, now you certainly get a wide range of assorted fingerlings now. Colored mm-hmm. potatoes are becoming more sought after. And so, whether it be the professional chef or even home cooks, people eat with all their senses. And so I think for them to really appreciate all these multicolored potatoes, I think it's certainly appealing to a lot of the potato growers now that are also being quite instrumental in making sure that new varietals do come into the marketplace.
And I think certainly one thing that I want to highlight for our listeners, because I think particularly over the last couple of years, the potato's really gotten a bad rap from a nutritional mm-hmm. standpoint. Mm-hmm. And people say, whatever you do, don't eat the potatoes. They're high in carbs and it's going to raise your blood sugar. But really what we've found is certainly, what's kind of neat and came right across the news this morning was the guy, I don't know if you've heard of this, yeah. I think in Australia with the potato diet. And yeah. He's lost 100 pounds eating nothing but potatoes, and mm-hmm. he's in perfect health. His blood lipids have come into a great range. He was very unhealthy to start with. He was eating a lot of mm-hmm. fried, processed fast food, and his sugars are down now as well. And I think this just speaks to the fact that, I really like to emphasize for folks when we approach healthful eating is to turn to, our natural products, real, authentic, wholesome food. And the potato is among that. So I wanted, let the folks know, you don't have to be afraid of the potato. It is actually a very healthful, particularly if you do something with the skin on, you're going to get a whole lot of fiber mm-hmm. packed with nutrition. It's actually got proteins and stuff in there as well. So mm-hmm. it's really something I think that sort of got, I think, an unfair bad rap from a nutritional standpoint. And, as a healthcare provider, I want to stand up, and say, hey, Mr. Potato Head is good. Put him on your plate. Mm-hmm.
and I think, yeah, and I think coming from your mouth, it certainly it provides that credibility because you're right. People certainly do not understand the nutritional value of potatoes. Great source of complex carbohydrates, rich in vitamins and minerals like magnesium and potassium. And some of the darker varieties of potatoes now that are coming into the marketplace also have a higher amount of antioxidants. From a standpoint of vegetable protein, it's very much in it. And so, appreciate and I love what the gentleman from Australia went through for the year, because I feel like, for the most part, I can relate to what he talks about, because I do, even to this day, I eat potatoes every day. I feel like it's part of my diet, and it's not exclusive as his is, but I certainly do appreciate it breakfast, lunch, and dinner as well.
Yeah, it's so very versatile, and I think you bring up a couple of great points, which is there were a bunch of healthcare, and I'm going to put this in quotes, I'm doing air quotes here, folks, experts who said, oh, you can't live on the potato, you know, you're gonna be deficient in this and that. And as you pointed out, the Incas, you know, that was their staple crop. They really did live almost on a number of variety of potatoes, and actually they were one of the first cultures to use freeze drying, because they would take the potatoes up to the mountain heights where the air was thin and cold, and it would essentially freeze dry the potatoes so that they could use them year round. And you know, two quick other nutritional points on the potato, I think that you highlighted, when you talk about colored potatoes, particularly anytime we see purples, like the purple potatoes, purples and reds, things like beets, when we see that in our foods, those foods, folks, contain powerful antioxidants because they will contain anthracycline, polyphenol compounds. So when you eat the rainbow and you eat a rainbow of potato colors and flavors, you certainly are getting, as you just pointed out, those powerful antioxidants. And when you can also eat the skins, you're going to get a lot of that fiber, both the soluble and the insoluble fiber, which tends to be a little bit more concentrated in the peel of the potato. And that's very important, because these are critical to maintain our gut microbiome health and have that healthy kind of gut microbiome. And that's going to translate into just good all-around health. It's going to lower, along with those antioxidants, kind of a pro-inflammatory effect that we see, you know, that's associated with the modern Western diets. And you're such a talented chef. You know, I'm going to be greedy here, because I want you to share with me and the other thousands of listeners out there, you know, some of your favorite ways to prepare potatoes. I saw one, you know, in the book that is really just one of my favorites, is the Hasselback potatoes. And I love the idea of putting that with a cardamom butter. Oh my gosh, how delicious. So share with us, if you could, a few smashed, a few mashed, a few boiled and baked ways you like to have the potatoes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there was an interest. You mentioned your wife being of Irish descent, and there was a time in the heyday, you know, the average Irish man in the house would eat 10 to 12 pounds of potatoes a day. Wow. And, you know, so it truly is magical in many ways. But, when I think about, you know, the most basic form of potatoes, sometimes, you know, think about mashed potatoes. But in the book, I have a recipe that I call the ultimate mashed potatoes. And the way you fix it is so amazing that you feel like you're eating a bowl full of clouds that have a strong potato flavor. And it is the technique that goes into it. Again, you start with the perfect potato for that. I use the russet. And I for that one, I peel it because I like the texture of mashed potatoes without the skin. But again, it's a very personal choice. But for this particular style of cooking, I peel it and I cut them into cubes and I boil it until they're just tender. You don't want to overcook it. And so if you stick a fork in, you'll just see it barely start to fall apart. And then I drain it and I return it back to the pan and I dry the potatoes out. And while that's happening, I also, you know, in a separate pan, I have my hot liquids going. But of course, you know, holiday season coming up, it's okay to be a little sinful. So I usually have heavy cream and cream cheese and butter and a really good quality of a kosher, like a really nice coarse sea salt, a coarsely cracked black peppercorns and some fresh herbs. And then when my potatoes are ready, I put them into a ricer, which is really key. And then you push it through the ricer into a serving bowl. And that ricer delivers, you know, these strands that look exactly like rice kernels, hence the name ricer. And then I pour the hot liquid over those potatoes, and I just fold it in, and I fold it in just until it's incorporated, and I stop. And as soon as you do that, that's when you're really going to taste the ultimate mashed potatoes. Otherwise, you know, you're releasing the starch molecules, and it becomes very gummy and so on. So like a good, you know, when you're making a good meringue with egg whites, you know, you fold it in, and that's it. You know, you stop right after that. And it's pretty much the same thing here. So that's, you know, one of the most common ways. But some of the more unusual ways, I think about the world of salads, you know, and I'm a big fan of a good boozy mojito. And in the book, I have a recipe, actually, for a mojito potato salad. It's the same concept of making a mojito. You muddle fresh limes and mint and a little bit of salt and pepper and just a tad bit of sugar for balance. And then I pour white rum into it.
I am liking this potato salad right here. I got to tell you, you know, I'm seeing this with the sunset and a sandy white beach as well. So this is just beautiful. I love this.
It is. And you think about, you know, especially even this time of the year, you know, when fresh pomegranate is in season, I actually have fresh pomegranate that I fold into those multi-colored fingerlings with the boozy rum. And I think it's such an addictive and a well-balanced salad. You think about, you know, you mentioned the Hasselback potato, you know, of Swedish descent. You cut the potato accordion style almost. And then, you know, I usually punctuate mine with fresh bay leaves, and I brush it with cardamom butter while it's, you know, sort of an homage to the Swedish community that uses cardamom in their cooking and baking in particular. And then I put that in the oven, and you get that beautiful Hasselback potatoes with that nice flavors of cardamom butter. That's another great way. And, you know, who doesn't like fried foods? I mean, I am a big fan of, you give me tater tots and I'll just sort of whisper.
I've got... Well, you know, it is the holiday, you know, with the holidays, you know, coming through, or that special occasion, whatever it be, you know, a little indulgence, you know, is certainly okay. So, you know, yes. I think it's all about, you know, having fun. And I think one of the things, you know, that's amazing about the potato that people just don't appreciate, it is much more than, you know, a drive-through simple fried food. It's so versatile, you know, as you're sharing with us, and it's so many different ways to use it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, I figured if I'm highlighting the fourth largest crop in the world and to show its international influence, that's why I did recipes that pretty much populated the world, with the exception of Antarctica. Not much going on there in terms of growing potatoes. And so the book really has a very much a strong international focus because of that. I've got, you know, think about even... you talked about the Irish, you know, I've got their traditional, I have a lamb roast that I braise in a dark Guinness stout with baby potatoes in there with some fresh herbs. And I mean, the flavors just, you know, seep right into those little potatoes. You think about, you know, Latin cuisine and empanadas, I'm a big fan of. I've got, you know, these beautiful handheld pies that are stuffed with purple potatoes. And so truly flavors that are from different parts of the world, and including flavors from India and China, which are the two largest growers of potatoes in the world.
Oh, that's very interesting. You know, I've certainly seen a lot in, you know, Indian cuisine, which you're far and away a better expert than I am. But I didn't realize that it was so predominant these days in Chinese culture. So can you find it in, or is it now being incorporated into traditional Chinese cuisine?
Very much so. In fact, you know, one of the people that I interviewed in the book, he is a master chef from China, and he has a restaurant here in town. And through an interpreter, he was saying that when he was back in China and they were just starting to push more and more usage of potatoes, I mean, they never used it in their home kitchens because they considered it to be poor man's food and it's not something that they wanted to do. You know, until the Chinese government started to push it more and more, and then they made one of the years, they made it the Year of the Potato, where, you know, they came up with all these different ways of incorporating the tuber in some of the more regional Chinese cooking techniques. And so in the book, I've got, you know, Kung Pao potatoes, which are, you know, you take these French fry cut potatoes and you smother them with a lot of cornstarch and he fries it. And you get this nice crispiness on the outside. Then he makes a very simple sauce of soy and ginger and a little bit of sesame oil and lots of dried red chilies, and he tosses the potatoes with it, and it's like unbelievable combination of flavors. And so I have potato dumplings in the book and steamed buns that are stuffed with the water chestnuts and scallions and potatoes. And so I think the versatility is certainly there, even with many regional Chinese cooking techniques.
That's just very interesting. And you see, to me, it's fascinating because what I'm seeing is that the potato is still, you know, evolving and still, you know, moving on to world domination. I mean, this is truly, you know, a vegetable, a tuber that is, you talk about, and we often kind of throw the term around lightly, oh, you know, it's a world cuisine, but this has really found its way into sort of every culture and types of dish. And you even have some recipes, which I love in the book, for potato desserts. Can you share a few and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, even though if you think about the world of sweet potatoes, which has nothing to do with potatoes, a totally separate right. plant, a member of the Morning Glory family, my editor and I thought, well, it would be nice to have a handful of sweet potato recipes in there. So I saved some of those for the dessert, but there's one potato dessert which I feel like, okay, it's a combination that's made in heaven, and it's these thick-cut mm-hmm. potato crisps that I double fry, and I sprinkle that with a coarse sea salt, and then I dip it in a dark chocolate that I sprinkled with the lavender sea salt, and you wow. know, again, it's that proverbial, you can't just have one, and with this one, I mean, you just can't stop eating it, and especially, you know, when you serve it with even just a bowl of a premium ice cream for dessert, I think the combination is just dynamite. So truly versatile. And, you know, of course, I've got also a sweet potato chocolate pound cake in the book as well. A handful of desserts, but, you know, truly, I think to do a complete meal from appetizers through dessert, I feel, is a no-brainer because you really see the depth of what you can do with the simple spud.
Yeah, you've really elevated it to new heights. Folks, we're talking with Raghavan Iyer about his new book, Smashed, Mashed, Boiled and Baked, and Fried Too, all about the potato. And Chef, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts a little bit. The listeners know mine, but I want to get your thoughts on, you know, when you're going to buy the potatoes, organic versus mm-hmm. conventional mm-hmm. versus GMO. So what are your thoughts and what do you like to use?
Personally, you know, I talk about it briefly in the book. You know, I think everybody has their opinion and their choice on what they want to do. I mean, you think about, you know, the world of pesticides and fertilizers. I mean, they go back, you know, way back when the Peruvians used to use something called the Peruvian guano, a byproduct of the coastal seabirds. You know, because of its ability to produce a lot more nitrogen, to generate chlorophyll in the soil. I think that was very, you could think about it, that sort of was a precursor to many of the more modern fertilizers and chemicals. And of course, you know, the whole key was to make sure that in this day and age, we don't have a duplication of what happened in Ireland. And also you look at the Colorado beetle, sure. which annihilated, you know, the crops to such a large extent that it affected the economy of a country. And people literally died because of that. And so you think about the world of GMOs, you know, and again, there are two sides to that issue. And, you know, one of the things is when they, if you think about the concept of coming up with a varietal of a plant that can withstand, you know, the severe changes in temperatures and soil conditions and so on, natural plant breeding methods have been in existence for centuries, and so what the GMO does is, particularly in the case of potato, they alter the code to make the potato more resilient to using to disease, but also to make sure that there's a dramatic decrease in the use of pesticides. And so, you know, again, we could certainly sit there and talk about two different issues with GMO, but I personally buy potatoes that are organic. I feel that this is one of those, and you think about the Dirty Dozen, where the Environmental Working Group came up with a shopper's guide to pesticides and produce, and you know, potatoes was one of them, and because of its thin skin and its ability to retain, you know, chemicals and pesticides, even after you wash them and you skin them. And so from a personal standpoint, you know, I always buy organic potatoes. And again, that's, I think, a very much a personal pocketbook decision a lot of people in this world. And but from a personal standpoint, I really do enjoy potatoes that are organic.
Yeah, and could you share just real quickly, how do you pick out, you know, the potatoes? I remember giving a class once, you know, teaching some consumers, and somebody said, well, you know, I always go and I try to get my potatoes when they're ripe, so I look for the green ones. And I was like, you probably want to avoid that. So could you share with the folks your tip for picking out some good tasty spuds?
Yeah, you want potatoes that, A, does not have a green color to it, and you want potatoes that don't have sprouts, and you want a potato that's quite firm to the touch. You don't want it shriveled up, and so I think that's one of the key things you look for, and I think more important is when you pick up the potatoes from the grocery store is storing it. You know, you want to store the potatoes in a dark, cool spot, not in the refrigerator, by the way, because that's where your starch gets converted to sugars, and that burns your potatoes very quickly, especially when you're making things like French fries and so on. Yeah, I would say about 50 to 60 degrees is actually good. I mean, if you think about still in many places where people are privy to getting potatoes that have been freshly dug out of the soil just before winter hit. You know, you think about the fall crop, and ideally, I mean, you store the potatoes, the mud's still intact. And so it's a great way to extend the shelf life of potatoes.
Well, that's great. I want to thank you so much for being here today. Folks, we've been talking with Chef Raghavan Iyer. You can get his new book, You Want It. It's a kitchen staple, smashed, mashed, boiled, and baked, and fried too. Also check out his website at raghavaniyer.com. And folks, this has been another wonderful, I want to thank you again, Chef. Been a wonderful introduction to the fascinating world of spuds. Never thought there was so much on potatoes. And folks, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.